I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
From WWTF in Chicago, welcome to This United States Life. I'm Ira Guess, and I'm here to do something we've never done before. Retract an entire program. Due to circumstances entirely within our control, we neglected to fact-check the falsehoods, prevarications, dissemblings, fabrications, lies, and bullshit wafted to us by the otherwise truthful Mike Daisy. As the most honest man of all time, Abe Lincoln, said, "You can fool some of the people all of the time, and all of the people some of the time, but there is a fine line between fudging facts and making shit up." Mike found the need to invent whole portions of his visit to the apple plant in China because apparently stories about abused workers jumping off of roofs needed a little punching up. We did not question Mike because he is A, hip, B, fat, and C, the closest thing New York has to the offspring of Spalding Gray and the Moth. Consequently, Mike Daisy became the first performer to piss off the public theater, National Public Radio, and the public all at the same time. Tonight we have a special guest. Not Mike Daisy. He is performing his one-man, 127 justification show. Instead, we have one of the people he met while he was in China, one of the people he talks about in his show. My guest is named Jenny. Hello, Jenny. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's
good to be
here, Ira.
Wait a minute. How many of you are there?
There's
just
one.
I'm hearing three people.
We're
composite.
Oh, I see. You're pieced together from different people Mike met in China.
Yes, I'm an oppressive security guard.
I'm a 12-year-old iPad assembler.
I'm completely made up.
And Mike keeps you completely straight in his head. Hello?
Don't
go
there,
girl.
Friend.
What's it like being created for the stage?
Mike
created
me
for
interviews
with
journalists
first.
Really? Why?
How
the
fuck
should
I
know?
I'm
a
composite,
not
the
friggin'
narrator.
So, what's next for you? Will you appear in any more of Mike Daisy's shows?
No.
We're
going
on
without
the
motherfucker.
Is that difficult for a composite character to just go out on your own?
Nah.
We're
doing
a
show
with
Reggie
Watts.
For This United States Life, I'd just like to say that I'm retracting this show as well. To my guest, good luck to all one of you. My final question, what does Jenny mean in Chinese?
Truth.
And how much of your interview tonight was made up?
Are we still on?
Back in 1984, Bruce Springsteen wouldn't let Ronald Reagan use Born in the USA for his presidential campaign. In 2008, the rock group Heart stopped John McCain and Sarah Palin from using their song Barracuda. Now, Rage Against the Machine, Peter Gabriel, Rush, and the Fabulous Thunderbirds have all told Rush Limbaugh to stop using their music. Conservatives are running out of pop music and have had to start using the public domain. We go now to a Mitt Romney rally in South Dakota, where reporter Stone Peck has more on this story.
I'm here with John Young, who organized today's event. And John, you had to change all the music at the last minute?
Yeah, we had an exciting playlist. Champion by Kanye West, Ready to Run by the Dixie Chicks, and just a nice old folk tune, If I Had a Hammer by Pete Seeger.
Then you asked the artist for permission to use it.
You'd think at least I'd have luck with a group called the Dead Kennedys, but boy, that phone call didn't go the way I wanted.
And that's when your staff started singing Jimmy Crack Corn?
Continuously, for the last hour. Ah, I think they're switching to the alphabet song.
So that's why you need songs with expired copyrights, so the composers can't stop you. But why sing them yourselves? Couldn't you just play a kid's record or something?
Then we need the singer's permission, and that didn't go well either.
Raffi actually called me a cock.
I can't imagine him doing that.
I know, right? So, we either do the music ourselves or we get it from old toys.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next President of the United States, Governor Mitt Romney!
This is Stone Peck in South Dakota.
It's time for Breaking Heads.
Oh!
Ron Paul, strong favorite in upcoming caucus on the island of Misfit Toys.
GOP blasts Obama for horrible NCAA picks.
Joseph Kony to retain control of Army of African Boys after intense custody battle with Angelina Jolie.
And now, a message to you personally.
Hi, I'm Larry Page, CEO of Google, and let me first assure you, we will continue answering your search requests. But after much soul-searching, we can no longer look you in the eye. We have sworn to provide the most comprehensive search engine on the internet, which means copying and pasting the entirety of human culture. Unfortunately, this exposes us to activities and desires that, frankly, have made life unpleasant. And you personally have been a big part of that. It's not just the naked pictures that you keep doing searches on because you refuse to bookmark them, or the 7 different addresses you have on Gmail. It's the other stuff. You know what we mean. And we know what we mean. Please don't talk about it. That makes it worse. We at Google will be professional about this. That is our job. But just know that you make us uncomfortable. And we are not friends.
In 2010, the Arizona legislature passed a bill, HB 2281, effectively banning ethnic studies in Arizona schools if they are, quote, designed primarily for a particular ethnic group, end quote. In Arizona, that means Mexicans and Latinos. But the bill is so broad and so vague, no one really knows which books are to be banned or who does the banning. But we do. HB 2281 is enforced by an obscure division of the Arizona Department of Education, the Arizona Book Banning and Burning Board. Yesterday, the ABBBB handed down a remarkable decision about one of the most beloved books of all time.
The Arizona Book Banning and Burning Board will come to order. The book we're considering today is the Bible. I will now canvass members of the board for your views. Jed?
Mr. Chairman, both books of the Bible, the Old Testament and the New, are in violation of HB 2281 by being totally biased in favor of the Jews and teaching the superiority of the Jewish race. The Old Testament's claim that the Jews are God's chosen people violates 3 main prohibitions of HB 2281. It is A, designed primarily for readers of a particular ethnic group. B, it advocates ethnic solidarity instead of treating people as individuals. And C, it promotes resentment towards a race or class of people. Marie, you want to enlarge on that?
The Bible promotes resentment towards many, many, many people. It accuses the Egyptians of enslaving the Jews, and it just despises the Babylonians, the Medes, the Persians, hairy men, scarlet women, the inhabitants of Sodom and Gomorrah, worshippers of Baal, the Philistines, the Assyrians, the Samaritans, the Hittites, and 143 other tribes.
Unacceptable!
Ridiculous!
Now, the Bible doesn't exactly violate the part of HB 2281 banning texts that promote the overthrow of the United States government, but it's always telling the Jews to throw off their chains and free themselves from captivity in abusive language, just like black and Latino empowerment figures such as Frederick Douglass, Toni Morrison, Dora the Explorer.
Order, please. Now, what about the New Testament? Tiffany, you were looking into that?
Okay. Its so-called hero, Jesus Christ, talks about overthrowing the law and says, I come with the sword. He advocates extramarital sex, love your neighbor as yourself, and I can hardly say it. Incest. He actually says, I say unto you, love your brother.
Have you seen my brother?
Wait, it gets worse. He also insults members of the financial sector doing legitimate business in Jerusalem's temple. If you ask me, he acts just like one of those anti-American, anti-capitalist rabble of Occupy Wall Street.
One more thing. We're only supposed to deal with the ethnic stuff here, but let me tell you, this Jesus guy's sexual profile makes him a totally unacceptable role model for pupils of any grade. He's close to his mother, his only female friend is a prostitute, and his 12 best friends are men.
The ABBBB voted unanimously that any reference to the Bible should be banned in all Arizona schools. However, at a press conference announcing the ban, the board's chairman, Vlad Q. Kukabrushkavinovici of Tombstone, stressed that the Bible was still infallible about all matters relating to abortion, gun control, masturbation, pot, stem cell research, homosexuality, and illegals.
It's time for Breaking Heads.
Oh.
California law requiring condoms in pornography is expected to revolutionize the way porn stars move to Nevada.
Santorum vows to replace porn with wholesome, educational Founding Fathers snuff film.
AIDS prevention video goes viral.
And now a final edition Radio Hour exclusive. Stone Peck has the details.
An unexpected development in the culture wars today. Tony Perkins, head of Washington-based Focus on the Family, the powerful conservative lobby, held an early morning press conference to announce an accommodation in the bitter standoff between fundamentalist evangelicals and advocates of same-sex rights.
Friends, society evolves, even if humans absolutely did not. For the conservative movement to remain relevant, we must accept that attitudes can change, and while male homosexuality is still an affront to God and a threat to Western civilization, we at Focus on the Family now believe female homosexuality may be acceptable in some contexts, as long as the women in question are young, physically attractive, and are wearing high-heeled shoes.
Sounds very tasteful.
Tony, what brought you to this change of heart?
Well, I was perusing the verses in Leviticus that condemn homosexuals to death, as I like to do, and I noticed that it only refers to, quote, men who lie with mankind as he lies with a woman, unquote. Now, the Almighty says nothing about women who lie with women, especially really fit young women with firm breasts and great hair.
So Focus on the Family is now going to endorse all sexual relationships between women?
No, this is a limited change in our policy. We still believe those ugly, fat, butch-type lesbians with short hair and denim jackets are an affront to all that is holy. But if two beautiful young women find themselves hungering for a man's touch and have nothing to relieve their ache but each other and a selection of toys, I think God understands. And we must, too.
Oh, this is a great I've got a rolling deadline right now.
Guys, I forgot something. It would also be okay if a pair of young girlfriends of legal age, despite their appearance, perhaps wearing school uniforms, were to explore their curiosity about their bodies with each other, but only if the cinematography were absolutely top class. However, they still cannot get married. That would be gross.
In a last-ditch attempt to revive his fading presidential campaign, Newt Gingrich promised to tame skyrocketing gasoline prices by hiring experienced hillbillies to roam the countryside shooting at some food. Gingrich's remaining spokesbot, his wife Callista, made this statement from a hotel lobby.
Sooner or later, these poor mountaineers will hit some bubbling crude. And then, my dear, dear Newt will have restored America to gas-guzzling greatness.
Gingrich, who previously suggested colonizing the moon by 2020, wants to differentiate himself as what he calls the only candidate ready to take America into the future.
Look, if you'd studied history, you'd know that this is just part of my genius plan of innovative conservation measures to create jobs and save money. Here's another one for you media mongrels to chew on. Requiring states to switch their electric chairs to an Energy Star model.
Later, at a midnight buffet in a different hotel, Gingrich proposed spending $2 billion for research into fester power.
You know, it's better than solar energy. This man, Uncle Fester, can operate a light bulb without using electricity. Once we duplicate that technology in a laboratory, we'll be able to power entire cities without fossil fuels.
Democrats quickly blasted Gingrich's energy proposal. White House spokesman Jay Carney.
This hillbilly initiative is a step backward and a clear attempt to buy the Republican hillbilly base with some hillbilly jobs. Furthermore, hillbillies? Everyone knows that's a derogatory label. The correct term is rural mountain indigenous peoples.
As of press time, no hillbillies were available to make a coherent statement.
It's time for Breaking Heads.
Oh!
Iran proposes compromise where they'd nuke just half of Israel.
Study. Rising gas prices forcing more people to whine like bitches.
Shocking report. Bin Laden seconds away from curing cancer when he was killed.
And now, a final edition Radio Hour commentary from our friends at allzombienews.com.
All right, thanks to the final edition for giving us this time to discuss important issues. I'm Matt Gorman, and my partner Stuart Stewart and I want to present the 5 reasons why you'd rather be attacked by a zombie than a vampire. Stuart?
Number 1, they're more honest. You look at a vampire, you don't know he's a vampire. Not until his maxillary cuspids pop out, and then it's too late. No mistaking a zombie, though. Even 150 yards away, the lurching gait, the blank eyes, the overly grabby hands, the notorious inattention to basic hygiene. With a zombie, you know exactly what you're dealing with. No surprises. A zombie can't talk, so it's never going to lie to you. Never going to lure you into its castle with a promise of a dinner and a house tour. Zombies don't even have property. Sure, one might occupy an abandoned factory or chicken coop for a snooze, but it can neither own nor rent.
Totally. Number 2, they can't fly. Well, I'm not sure if vampires fly, but I think they do. Well, maybe they have to change into a bat first. I don't know. I need to do a little more research on this point. Anyway, zombies definitely can't, that's certain, and having a drooling predatory creature drop on you from the sky is something that can ruin the best of days.
Vampires can definitely fly.
I totally thought so.
Yeah, anyway, 3, zombies can't have sex. This is important because A, the mere thought of a fetid, rotting zombie engaging in physical intimacy is enough to make me violently ill, and B, vampires are often attractive. They're rumored to be good in bed. And then, just when you're reaching climax and feeling at your most vulnerable, he or she will sink his or her teeth into your tender throat. In the morning, you feel betrayed, used, and very, very tired. With zombies, this never happens.
Never. And 4, zombies resonate more with our time. For vampires, the Victorian era, that was totally their moment. Most vampires were tuxedo-wearing older guys with Eastern European accents, and they seduced scores of innocent virgins who were easy marks because they were frustrated at not being able to acknowledge their dark urges in polite society. But today, no one is innocent and no one's a virgin. Plus, just look at the herds of glassy-eyed somnambulants walking around oblivious to their surroundings because they're staring at their pods or pads. Zombies! Look at the endless lines of people stuck in traffic jams.
Yeah.
Zombies! Look at the people mindlessly voting for Republicans.
Yeah. Zombies! Oh, political zombie dig! Finally, five. Zombies are easier to kill. This is crucial. Vampires are not only wily, but super strong. Any vampire over the age of three can pretty much have his way with you, whereas zombies, being dead, are slow and stupid. Equally important, a zombie cannot confuse you by introducing moral doubt into the relationship. While a trapped vampire may say, "Please don't kill me, kind sir or ma'am. I promise I'll change my evil ways as well as providing you with a dynamite bout of oral sex." A zombie never pleads, grovels, seduces, or cajoles. It just keeps plodding straight ahead and trying to eat you. Thus, crushing its skull with a pipe wrench won't trouble your conscience at all. And really, isn't that what matters most?
The best-kept secret of America's very rich? Exclusive use of humankind's most unattainable dream. An instant, infallible cure for massive hangovers. Economics professor Paul Krugman.
There have always been pornographically wealthy people making the rest of us miserable. Knocking back pricey alcohol, champagne, vintage wines, crusted port, has always been the most nauseating way they flaunt their pornographic wealth. But no amount of wealth can buy freedom from the horrific bill of overindulgence the human body presents the next morning. So, the unwealthy people have always been able to say,
"Serves the pornographically wealthy motherfuckers right."
Not anymore! A product quietly launched by Merck 2 years ago instantly wipes out a massive hangover. The invisible axe blows to the skull, the aching self-loathing, all points paralysis, the mouth that tastes like a leprous sow's crotch. It's all history with WealthCare. The catch? The active ingredient in WealthCare, an enzyme derived from the pituitary gland of the roseate spoonbill, costs $12,000 a milliliter. Minimum effective dose, 15 milliliters. But the cost doesn't faze some, like Trump sons and possible heirs Eric and Donald Jr. We caught up with the big game hunters at a B-movie star-studded party in Acapulco, where they were celebrating their shooting the last cheetah in the Costa Rican rainforest. Hey guys, that looks like a 30-year-old single malt you're chugging.
Ha! Shouldn't it straight from the bottle, dude?
Second bottle. Hey Rick, piss the fucking hooch, man!
So I guess you guys will be hitting the WealthCare tomorrow morning.
Fucking
yeah!
At 150 grand a shot?
Don't even put a dent in Pop's piggy bank. Dude, don't even worry about it. I mean, anyway, okay, this stuff has changed people's lives. Look at Charlie Sheen, man. He'd never have got a shot of that deadbeat series without W.
W is fucking amazing. You can drink for literally days. Mm-hmm. You can totally black out. You can do all the fun shit you do when you're blind, shit face, foobar, torch homeless guys, vomit on servants, shoot dogs in Central Park from the Trump Tower, date rape models, and yeah, dump their bodies at sea. The works!
The next day. Next day, you regain consciousness, just a slurp of W, boom! You're ready to start over.
The pornographically wealthy agree with the Trump lads about the magic potion's efficacy, but they don't all agree about the price tag. Hewlett-Packard chief executive, Meg Whitman.
Look, out-of-control drinking is a cost of doing business. Sinking millions into new job creation over dinner takes raw courage. It takes massive generosity. You can't expect billionaires to do that without getting legless drunk. Why should they also be expected to foot the bill for feeling okay the next morning?
House Republicans agree. They're introducing legislation requiring health insurance providers to extend coverage to, quote, job creator hangover relief. House Speaker John Boehner.
Hey, barkeep, another bottle of this Merlot. Now, where were we again?
We were discussing job creator hangover relief.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, with this requirement, at the very least, we can bring the copay down from six figures to three, you know? Or two, at the very least, or none, right? Damn stuff should be free, at least for the people who can afford it. You know, why not? That's what the laws are for, right?
The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, satire with teeth. For your fill of more brilliant, cutting, outrageous stuff, head over to www.thefinaledition.com at least once a day. This is Episode 8 of The Final Edition Radio Hour, and the actors were Peter Sagal, Kevin Jenist, Barry Lank, Darby Worley, Anne Tuchel, Karen Lurie, John Marshall, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. The writers were Peter Kleiman, Jay Welch, Peter Sagal, Louis Grossberger, Barry Lank, John Baxter, Mike Richardson, Brian, Joseph Rocher, Dan Frick, John Marshall, Roy Rivenberg, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Our engineer was Gregory Russ. The producers, Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2012.